Kent Biz Connect on Radio Ashford with Martin White.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Biz Connect, a radio show today. Thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful, sunny summer's day. I don't know about you, but I haven't been able to sleep for the last week or so. The weather's just been so hot. I've got cats in the garden, fighting each other. I've got birds being eaten by cats in the garden. It's all happening. But anyway, hopefully you're all okay out there. And thank you so much for tuning in today. We've got two super guests with us, as always, in the studio. And I will ask them to introduce themselves very shortly. We're going to be with you for the next hour or so. We've got some super music chosen by our studio guests today as well. We have a show website, kentbizconnect.co.uk, and you can find out more information about today's guests and also catch up with previous shows in our episode section. And this show will also be available to listen again from round about tomorrow lunchtime. So do check us out there. We also have a dedicated LinkedIn and Facebook show page. Please search for Biz Connect Radio Show, and you can find out more information about upcoming guests. Talking of which, if you would like to join us on the airwaves, we're always delighted to have local business guests join us on the airwaves in the studio. So do please get in touch with us on one of the aforementioned. But I think for now, it's time to ask our guests to introduce themselves. So to my left, we have...
Hi there, Steph Harris. I am the new Business and Social Value Director, Apex Contractors, a regional contracting company.
Brilliant. Lovely to have you, Steph. And to me, Peter, lovely to have you with us as well. You're both newbies.
Yes.
So we'll be gentle with you today. We won't ask you anything too taxing, but hopefully there'll be some useful insight for people tuned in today. Perhaps you've got... young adults at home who are starting out on their career journey for the first time. Hopefully Steph will be able to kind of give you some pointers there, certainly when it comes to you know, how you might think about pursuing a career in construction. So really looking forward to having a chat with you. And Peter's obviously going to be talking about profitability and how businesses generally can actually, you know, make money you know, for the long term. So I think there'll be some useful nuggets in there for everybody today as well. So do stay with us. We're going to play a couple of tracks from Steph. We've got Craig David and we've got Jamiroquai, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect radio show today. As we were saying before the break, we are delighted to have two super guests in the studio today. We have Steph Harris from Apex Contractors, and we have business advisor Peter Sell from The Profitable Contractor. Welcome to the studio, both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Lovely to see you. Steph, we're going to start with you, if we can.
Sure.
Just tell us a little bit more about Apex. Give us an introduction to who you are and your expertise in the Kent construction space.
Yeah, of course. So Apex are a regional building contractor. They've been around for 29 years now. Actually, we're looking forward to celebrating our 30th anniversary next year and busy planning what we might do to celebrate. So, but we're involved with many kind of regional projects that people might have passed on their way to work. So we deliver care homes, schools, community projects. We've done a bit of an industrial as well in the past, but yeah, locally people might have seen we've done some work in Folkestone at the Lees Lift. We're working on Gun Wharf council offices for Medway Council. We're just finishing a care home in Kings Hill. So if people are travelling around the area, they might see our lovely blue Apex hoarding.
Okay, that's really varied, isn't it? So we've gone from care home to enormous council offices.
Yes, yeah.
To a heritage and restoration project in Folkestone. So let's tell us a little bit more about that one, if you can, please.
Yeah, of course.
I've recently seen you've got the new sort of the lift cars have just arrived. Is that right, being refurbished?
They are being. So they got taken out last year and we're really excited that they've kind of gone away for restoration. I think the hope was that they would be able to be restored and retained as they were, but the damage having been in a maritime environment for so long meant they had to be rebuilt from scratch, basically. But what that's allowed is for a bit of flexibility in the carriages and they'll be more accessible to the local community and for the visitors to Folkestone. So, and they're due back very soon. So that will be an exciting milestone in the programme.
Brilliant. Well, having walked up that hill many times.
Yes, it's a pain, isn't it?
You often get to the bottom, don't you, Peter? And you think, I wish there was a lift to take me back up to the
right.
top.
That's right.
We're like that in Ramsgate. We've got these fabulous lifts dotted all over the cliffs, but none of them actually work. So, yeah, good. It'll be good to see that up and running.
It will be,
again.
Absolutely.
And tell us a little bit about Gun Wharf, because that's a fascinating project, isn't it?
Yes, we've really enjoyed kind of getting under the skin of Gun Wharf. Obviously, people know that obviously it's the refurbishment of the offices that Medway Council have been in for quite a long time. But prior to Medway Council being in there, it was actually owned by Lloyds Bank. So it was actually set by them, and it's got some fascinating history. We learned that there used to be a dance floor in where the main canteen area was. And yeah, we found some really fascinating thing. And I think as we start to peel away some of the layers in there, we probably find some interesting artifacts, I'm sure. So,
wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
An amazing location as well, isn't it? Right on the sort of on the water there.
It's really beautiful. Mm. And you can see why Medway Council want to look after it. It is kind of, it's listed as well. So there's some architectural elements in there. It's not listed in the traditional form that you'd think of. It's not super old, but the way that it was architecturally designed and the way it was constructed has put it onto that listing. So concrete work and things like that have meant that we're going to be preserving a lot of that. And then creating just a more of a modern space for the staff at the council. And obviously with a lot of the changing of the unitary authority, I think that obviously plays a big part in what they're looking to create for the future.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Yeah. It's all of that happening in the background as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, incredible. Okay, so that's a little bit about Apex. I want to understand a little bit more about your role now, if we can, please. So your job title is New Business and Social Value Director.
Yes. Bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is a little bit. But you are another great example and role model, I think, for women generally in the construction industry. And we've had the likes of, you know, Ellie Farlow on this year and Pamela Branchett from Walker Construction as well.
That's fantastic ladies.
And we've just had your opposite number at Bovril on as well.
Yes.
So there's lots of you out there doing some really great work. Tell us a little bit about your journey though.
Yeah, of course.
And how you ended up in what is traditionally a sort of a very male dominated industry in construction.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a local girl through and through. I studied in Kent. I went to the University of Kent, and it was always my desire to kind of remain in Kent and not go to London. I never really wanted to travel to the city to work. And I studied business at the University of Kent, and I loved my time there. And when I came out, I was looking for a job, and I found this role for a local construction firm, sadly no longer a company, but it was a writing role. It was like a junior writing role. And I thought, well, I'll be good at that. I can write. So yeah, I was thankful to get the job there. And that's kind of how I fell into construction, and actually probably not too a dissimilar story to a lot of the people that, you know, Peter and I meet, that when you speak to them that they've kind of fallen into the industry. So I was there, and I worked for a variety of regional contractors. I've worked for a consultancy. I've been self-employed and kind of picking up skills along the way that's kind of led me into this role at Apex, which is kind of it's kind of an umbrella term for looking after winning work, so winning new work for the business, doing marketing and business development. But then obviously the core part of what I really love about the role is doing the social value, which I know we're going to touch on a bit later. Yeah. So,
well, let me take you back to the beginning there. Because, you know, getting that, there'll be a lot of kind of parents out there with young adults, perhaps who've just finished higher education or just finished school.
Yes. Yeah.
And thinking about their kind of first job and kind of career move. Yeah. You fell into a writing role. What was a writing role, and what were they advertising for? And how were you able to kind of get that foot in the door?
I'm going to tell you, see, I actually didn't really know what the job was when I went for it. It was called a submissions coordinator. And I was like, I have no idea what a submission is. Well, I can now safely say I obviously know very well. Yes. I've done hundreds of submissions in the 15 years I've been in the industry. But I think for me, it was they were looking for someone with just some ambition and some kind of willingness to learn. And I think for me, that's a crucial thing that I would share today, is if you do have a young person out there that's looking for a role, it might not necessarily they have the right skills, because they're always going to have some base level skills. And we were, you know, talking about Saturday jobs and bits before we came on air, weren't we? But I think for me, it was I went in and I kind of showed my kind of willingness to learn, my ability to work as a team, in a team, for a team, and a desire to just to kind of progress, really. And I think a little bit of ambition kind of goes a long way.
Yeah, okay. So that's good. So being proactive and confident enough to sort of get on the front foot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you mentioned in there, you know, soft skills as well, because you know, we are fixated with kind of qualifications, and in many ways, certainly when I went through the educational system, it was a sort of parrot learning kind of approach to passing exams. I mean, basically you had to memorise information and then just be able to regurgitate it in a two-hour exam.
Yes, absolutely.
But increasingly, I think, you know, employers are waking up to the fact that they need people who are going to fit well inside their organisation, that have got a can attitude, and that counts for a lot, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think what we look for is whether someone fits our culture, whether they're the right fit for the organisation. You know, especially if you're a youngster looking for your first role, we can teach you the skills that you need, but we can't teach attitude or personality. And obviously, you know, you've got to have those skills in abundance to come in and do your job well. So, yeah, we're quite pleased that we've got a team of 9 future leaders in the business now, all of whom have got the right attitude and forward momentum to want to do well and start their careers.
Well, I did pick up on that on your website. You are very much committed to, you know, training and developing the next generation, aren't you?
I mean, yes.
If you have a look on the Apex website, you know, there are many individuals who, you know, are going through a training program.
Yes.
You've got that kind of commitment for the long term there.
And there's a mixture of them as well. So we've got some that are doing their degrees part-time. So they do day release to university. And again, a great way to get a degree without having to pay for it nowadays. As we all know, that university is extremely expensive. When I went, obviously, I was the last year of cheap fees. I was very grateful that that was the case. And I think that that's a good thing, that more employers are able to get funding for courses and put young people through those higher educational skills, because I think there's still value in that. A lot of people might not say so, but I do think there's value in a degree still, even though obviously I would say that maybe because I have one. But I think that even going into degrees later in life isn't a bad thing either. And then we've also got apprentices. So we've got people doing level 3s. So what is the equivalent of, I think, A-levels, I think, now, or T-levels. And again, they're doing day release to college, slightly different courses. And we've had people that have stayed at school, gone and done A-levels and T-levels. T-levels are a great function. We might pick up on that a little bit more later. But they come to us with a bit of experience and a bit of knowledge, and that makes a world of difference.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly... you know, with the new, I'll use the word new government, but I mean, obviously that's the wrong word. But I think the new Prime Minister, I can't remember how many we've had now. Is it 7
Lost count.
10 years?
Yeah.
Our new Prime Minister certainly seems to be quite committed to actually creating more of those entry-level kind of job opportunities, funding it through the employer levy or whatever vehicle that might be. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really positive thing to look out for the future. Mm. But in your case, where was your job advertised? Was it in the local paper? Or
oh, gosh, that's a really good question. I'm not even entirely sure. I think it was on a internet job board. Okay. It might have been Jobs in Kent. I don't know if they still exist. Do they still exist? Jobs in Kent still exist? I don't know, maybe.
Owns that business.
Yeah, Paul, I think Andrews, it might have been, so, yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Nice bit of advertising for it.
You're welcome, Paul. No, I think I generally just saw it, and I was quite... I didn't kind of spam my CV out there at the time, but they were 10 minutes down the road from me, so it was a wonderful way to start a career. I literally used to rock out of bed, like, late morning and be in work for 9, but obviously things have changed now, but a lovely way to begin. And then obviously it became a bit of a networking thing for me, and then every job I've kind of had since then hasn't been... I think out of them, I've had only one of them has been an interview.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting that it's that element of them building your network. And I know that we speak quite a lot about building the right and who you know and what you know and how they connect together can be really,
really important. So leverage those kind of LinkedIn networks.
Absolutely.
And opportunities that are free to use.
Yes.
And free to access, and think about that perhaps, you know, 1 or 2 years before you leave school or you leave college.
Yes.
You know, build that network before you need it, kind of thing.
I've been fortunate enough to kind of go back to the University of Kent and have a chat with some of their students, like in a pre-employability scenario. And the one thing I always say to them is put a LinkedIn page together now and share what you're doing and get used to that idea of interacting. And, you know, I think it's always, you feel nervous about reaching out to people, but most people are just nice people. If you send them a message, they'll probably reply. So if you want to, you know, chance your arm and send someone a message, why not? So
I think that's really good advice. Yeah, don't be... I mean, what have you got to lose?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think would be my kind of argument there. So that's really great advice. Thank you, Steph. I'm going to move the conversation on slightly now. You mentioned social value.
Yes.
Tell us, what is social value? What does social value even mean?
Yes.
You know, particularly in a construction context.
Yeah, I think some people might know it better as something like corporate social responsibility or community engagement. Social value is a bit more of a broader umbrella term for that. So part of our work is for public sector works like local councils and authorities requires us to put a proportion of our time into engaging with the local community in many different facets. That can be through offering work experience and apprenticeships. It can be just through community engagement. It can be through environmental commitments as well. So part of when we are winning work, and part of my job as new business director is to ensure that we have a plan in place to positively impact the communities that we work in. So it's not just about the build itself, it goes wider than that, and that the money that the council is spending can be seen to be adding value rather than just into the building but into the community as well. So it can also be local supply chain, and you know, just new roles. It could be, there's lots of different options.
Yeah, so any commissioning authority, for example, whether it's a district council or a unitary authority like Medway or whoever it might be, ultimately wants to know what the additional benefit is going to be outside of, you know, you're retrofitting a piece of existing office space or whatever that might be. It's how it's going to benefit the wider community.
Yeah, absolutely. And a part of what we do is we have to put a plan together in the first instance to showcase how we're going to achieve that over the contract. And I'm quite fortunate enough that I have a team, you know, that within Apex that are solely dedicated to delivery of social value. And I think that that allows us to put together some really tangible outcomes for clients. And part of the reason I think we've been quite successful over the last couple of years, amongst other things that we're doing internally at Apex, is this ability to showcase that we can deliver locally. Leaslift's a great example of, you know, we've got a site manager down there, Chris, who spends a lot of his time just engaging with the local people. We talk to them about the project. I think he'd racked up last time, I looked, at least over a week's worth of time just talking to people about the project and telling them what's going on. And that's so crucial to keep that, something so precious to the community like the lift is really important that we keep sharing that information out there. So it can be as simple as that or more complex as creating new apprenticeships and job roles or spending money locally. It can really depend. So
what does the waiting look like now on you know, when you're invited to tender for large construction projects? Because traditionally, I guess, Peter, you know, everything kind of came down to cost, and you know, it was all about the kind of, you know, the cheapest option was the one that kind of won the contract. But what does the waiting look like now? Because we've had a new Procurement Act.
Yes.
It's called the 2023 Procurement Act.
Correct.
It didn't come in until 2025.
Correct.
So it took a while, but that now, you know, that is in place.
Yes.
We've got a new social value model built into that.
Yes.
We have a net zero ongoing commitment that's kind of built into that as well. So what does the waiting look like typically when you're, you know, that's the quality side of a tender, I guess.
Yes,
isn't it?
Correct. Yeah.
What
so
does that look like?
Yeah, it can vary between contracts, and you know, some projects we see that are, you know, they might be out of the 100% available, it's 30% price and 70% quality. They're the ultimate good ones that we like to bid for. If only they were every tender.
Amazing.
Sadly not. But yeah, but out of that 70%, you might get 10% that's around social value, and it has to be a roughly a minimum. Most local authorities should be allocating 10%, and actually sometimes it might put us off bidding for a contract if we don't see that in there. So again, sometimes for us, we kind of look at something and go, is it right for us? Are they looking at the right things? And if we don't think that we can add value to them because we're not given the opportunity to show that, we might choose not to tender. But I do think a lot of authorities now, price is still important, but also what are they getting for every pound? And I think part of that is how we, you know, social value is how we showcase what we can deliver for that pound.
If you can pump £10 million into a local economy, job creation, supply chain, subcontractors, labourers, you know, then that's going to offset some of that additional cost anyway, isn't
that,
it?
That multiplier effect is so crucial. And my team and I, we sit down and we target a minimum of 100% return. And some of our jobs, we achieve 140%. Again, it really depends on the project. But for what that, you know, what that means, for every 10 million, we're giving 10 million back, whether that be kind of into the local supply chain. And then you've got local people working for local businesses spending in local communities. And I think sometimes it's quite easy to underestimate the ripple effect that a spend of, say, 10 million can have on the local community. It's really we quantify all that, and we calculate all that out, and we can provide reports on how we achieve that. And I think it certainly lit up some clients' eyes, I think, to see that in action.
Definitely fantastic. Well, that's amazing. Give us a shout out, Steph, for how people can get in touch with you, connect with you. We were talking about LinkedIn, for example, but also your Apex website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's apexcontractors.co.uk, and you can see all about our projects on there. We're also on LinkedIn under Apex Contractors, and obviously I'm on there as Steph Harris.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Great. Thank you for now. I think what we're going to do is play a little bit more music. We've got something chosen by our second guest today, a track by Pink Floyd, and you may get the link, you may not, but hopefully you do. And we're going to have a chat with Peter when we come back after this. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back in a few minutes.
Kent Biz Connect on Radio Ashford with Martin White.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect, a radio show today, and staying with us on this beautiful sunny afternoon. We've just been hearing from the amazing Steph Harris from Apex Contractors, all about her career journey and advice for young people in particular, I think, starting out today. But what I'd like to do now is introduce our second guest, and that is Peter Searle, who is a business advisor from the Profitable Contractor. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Martin.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot in a minute, and I'm gonna ask you the $64 million question. But before I do that, I know you also have a strong background in construction, working for the likes of Kier. But you don't just offer practical business advice for construction firms. So tell us a little bit about your journey, where you've come from construction to where you are today, please, and what your motivation was behind that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, listening to Steph earlier talking about the dance floor reminded me of some of the jobs that I worked on. And there was one down at Dover in the tunnels under the castle. I remember there was a project there to turn it into a visitor centre. And we took down a wall, and we were able to go out onto a balcony that was stood on for the first time, that Winston Churchill had stood on, and yeah, looked across the channel. And when you're actually involved with the projects on site, it's all very, very exciting. Yeah. But as you go up the corporate ladder, you end up doing more and more reporting. And I got to a stage where I thought, I've had enough of this reporting. I need to get out. Mm. And I thought, well, too young to stop work. So what am I going to do? And one of the things that we've been doing was going around seeing the supply chain and interviewing them so that they became a preferred supplier. And the excitement with a lot of the SMEs and the ideas that they were having, I found really, really exciting. And by that time, I'd done an MBA and what have you, and was really interested in business strategy. And I thought, I could help some of these businesses. There's some very, very easy, quick wins. Mm. And that's really how I got into it. And over the last 10 years, I've helped, well over 150 businesses.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So let me take you back to that work that you were doing with supply chain. What were you trying to do there? In terms of, was it building resilience, making sure that they were going to be a partner for the long term?
Yeah, there was a mixture of things. It was when construction's always evolving, and Steph's been talking about CSR and the latest procurement rules. I mean, there's a big move now post Grenfell for potentially a single regulator to come in, and one of the things, there's a call for evidence out at the moment that closes in a few days' time, where they're looking at what that regulator will regulate. And it's amazing that amongst those things that they're probably going to be looking at is people's behaviours and everything. But going back, from when I started my career, it was very, very adversarial. Everything was a claim. it was very, very commercial. And then there was a number of reports, Latham, Egan and so on, that came about and said people should work far more collaboratively. Okay. And one of those reports was about this partnering arrangement. And in the late 80s, the likes of Sainsbury's and the government and a lot of the big companies started partnering with contractors, and you therefore had to then cascade that partnering on down to the supply chain. So when you were bidding for, we were bidding for it was P22, the big health contract at the time, you had to demonstrate that you knew your supply chain. So we went out and we talked to them, And I can remember having a weekend over in Northern Ireland, speaking to the precast people. I mean, they were only in Northern Ireland because transport was cheap. You know, the lorries take the food over to Ireland, Northern Ireland, and there was nothing coming back the other way. So people set up precast yards over there and just tucked in the precast planks into the lorries, and they came back, so they had a return load.
So is that the spirit of construction today, both of you? Is it about collaboration and partnership with supply chain? Is that...
It still carries on because the contractors, the larger contractors, go out to the supply chain and they help. The supply chain then gives them good ideas as to how they can effectively provide innovation and what have you into their bids. Yeah.
Okay, so it still works today then?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Fantastic, good.
Yeah.
Right, I am going to put you on the spot now. You know, thinking a bit more broadly than just kind of construction, because there will be a lot of businesses, small businesses in particular, tuned in today, and small business owners. You know, how do businesses make money today? Because, you know, whenever you turn on the news, you know, we've got problems with oil, we've got knock-on effects with inflation, you know, we've got supply chain kind of going out of business because there isn't any
liquidations
for them. Yeah, we've got liquidations, we've got zombie companies who are really just, you know,
treading water.
You know, how do businesses fundamentally make money, Pete?
There's two or three aspects to it. I mean, in the first one is you've got to be providing something that people want to buy.
Right.
That underpins everything. So you've got to have a purpose to the business. Otherwise, it's just a lifestyle business. So once the purpose is there, people get going. There's a sort of a paper that says, you know, people start up, they get established. They then start to scale, and then finally they exit from the business. And you've really got to understand how you're going to exit from the business when you start up. So are you going to take money out of it as you go, or are you going to grow it and make it really valuable? That's another consideration when you start. The third aspect is actually understanding the numbers, and this is where the biggest problem is. What happens is people go to their accountant, they get set up, or find an accountant, they get set up. I'm not having a go at accountants, they're only doing what, you know, they're asked to do. And they will prepare the accounts at the end of the year. The first time that most people know that they've got a problem is when they can either pay a bill or when they get the accounts at the end of the year and it doesn't look particularly good. And they think, this is the norm. I should just be doing all these hours and not really working for anything because, you know, I've got to work hard to invest in it and get going. But unless you start looking at absolutely every single aspect of the business and seeing what every aspect costs in market terms, you don't really know where you are.
Okay.
And that's a lot of what I do, is just sitting down with people, unravelling the numbers and working out where the money's really being spent.
Yeah. So your first point was, you know, have a product or service that there's a market for, that you know there's a market for.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you an example of that. I worked with a telephone engineer back in, this was 2019, and remember it because it's when we were talking about what's the market doing and all of that sort of thing and what was changing, especially on the technology side in telephones. He was an engineer that did, do you remember the old PBX boards?
Yes.
Yeah, on the reception where you flick the switches up and down. So he'd come out of BT, used to do the repairs for PBX boards, set up his own business, and he said to me, you know, each year there's this downturn in the summer, which I expect because people have gone on holiday, but each year the downturn's getting deeper. What's going on? And we were talking about the technology, and I said, so where do you see the technology going? I said, you know, PBX boards, they all look a bit, you know, old, don't they? I said, you know, everybody's got a mobile phone or whatever these days. Are they really going to continue? And he said, well, I said, you know, I suppose they will do in big organisations. And then we talked about the transfer from analogue to digital. And I said, so when they switch off the analog lines in 2024, your PBX boards won't work. He said, yeah, that's right. Oh my God, I haven't got a business really, have I? And it was just that simple, stepping back, looking at the wider environment to see whether or not a business was really viable.
And as you say, you know, quite often business owners are so busy working in
the business
every day
that
they never have an opportunity to think about the business and kind of look in on it in that way.
That's right.
But your second, your third point,
which
is directly related to have I got a product or service that somebody wants to buy, is, you know, how much am I going to charge for it?
Yeah.
And how do I price that?
That's where everybody starts out. And generally speaking, what they do is there's one of two things. They either do it by rule of thumb. So a lot of trades will go out there and they sort of work out their hours, and then they'll add 20, 25 or 30%, whatever their friends have told them down the pub is what they're generally adding.
A markup.
And that's a problem in itself because it doesn't necessarily cover your margin. No, definitely not. So one way is that. The other way that people do it is they just employ somebody to ring round the competitors and see what they're charging.
Right.
And that can work and it can't work because some of the businesses that you might ring up are in the race to the bottom already and are not giving proper prices.
No.
So if people are starting off and they're using either the rule of thumb, the markup they've heard down the pub, or just getting prices off of other people, it's not really going to work. You've got to sit down, you've got to list out all the costs, you know, what's the accountant, the insurance, your office, computers, whatever, build up a cost, have a guess at how much turnover you're going to get, how much income, and work out the percentage, and then you need to at least start adding that to your market rate salary.
Yes.
And if you're not earning that sort of money, unfortunately, you're not really viable. And unfortunately,
so factor your salary into that as well. You know, what do I need to be earning as a self-employed tradesperson or whoever?
A market rate salary, I say, because what people need to earn is often far greater than what they're actually worth in the market.
Yeah.
But the other thing that happens is people are advised by their accountants, quite rightly, to claim dividends and a very small pay. Mm. Well, dividends are really only supposed to come from profit.
Mm.
Then, you know, in the early days, it's okay to use them because they're flexible. But if you're not factoring in a market rate salary, your accountant can say, yeah, you're profitable, you've got enough to pay the dividends. But in actual fact, you haven't really broken even on market rates. And the penny drops. I see people's jaw drops when they think, you know, I'm doing all this work and we're not really making money. So they've just got to nudge up the prices.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're good as what they say they are and they care as much as what they say they do, then they should be able to nudge up the prices because people look for good people.
Yeah. Or they need to think, as you know, as Apex do and Steph was describing, about, you know, what additional value add can I bring to the table? You know, where's my quality score?
Yeah.
Other, you know, outside of just supplying a specific product or service.
That's right, yeah.
You know, what additional benefit can I bring to the table that other people can't?
And that can be very simple things. Quite often it's just communication as to how things are going. You know, we've received your email, and you don't get just an automated one, you get a proper one. Exactly. And that sort of thing. And
customer service, something that just doesn't exist today.
No,
if you build that into your business,
your model,
ethos, and you know, from day one, you know, people will want to do business
with
you because they have a good experience.
And they spread the word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, word of mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll be telling people to come along to this show because it's...
Fantastic. Good. Okay. So we've talked about product. We've talked about pricing. And numbers, obviously, you mentioned, fall within all of that. You know, it's, you know, you really need to understand that before your accountant tells you what they're telling them.
That's right. There's two sets of accounts, effectively. There's the management accounts, which you need to do yourself, which is just like doing your household budget, really.
Monthly?
Yeah, or if money's tight, yeah, then, you know, you're down to looking at what's in the bank account,
yeah,
you know, daily.
So cash flow forecast,
mm-hmm, the turnover forecast, start, yeah, chasing people up, you know, if they're not paying, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's all fundamentals.
We had Kevin Hartlett
from Pecunia
a few weeks back. You know, the number of businesses that are too backward in coming forward when they're asking to get paid.
Yeah, a lot of people just have forgotten to pay,
yeah,
and a quick call,
yeah,
will put them on the straight and narrow, yeah, or they're very embarrassed and they will pay up.
Yeah. Yeah. So is there an easy way for business owners to do that? Because, you know, I'm a tradesperson, I'm an electrician, I'm a carpenter, I'm a builder.
Chasing isn't in the nature, is it? Or
but numbers, you know,
no.
I'm not familiar with numbers necessarily. So how do I do that?
There's a couple of ways. When I work with people, I start off with just some straightforward things. So looking at an income forecast, for instance, taking the accounts and actually going through them, the section particularly on overheads, and making sure that there are things in there that should be in there and things that should be in the job costs go into the job costs. So once you actually go through these things with somebody, they suddenly... they're not so frightened of it. The biggest thing is often just opening them up and looking at them,
yeah,
as opposed to understanding what's in them. And then these days you can use AI for all sorts of things. I was last week I was looking at a business. I mean, it's quite a mature business, quite a large turnover, and we were looking at the overheads percentage to add on and trying to nail down what potentially the income could be. And I came up with a prompt that we put into AI with their elementary spreadsheet,
yeah,
and it literally threw out for us a monthly forecast. And, you know, it's there.
Yeah.
Although you've got to be quite careful about what you do. There was another contractor I was working with. He was just taking stuff out of the accounts, taking it out of other bits of software, sticking it into AI and saying, you know, what's going on here? And because everything was in the wrong place, the AI was giving all sorts of answers.
Of course, but you only get out what you put in.
Rubbish in, rubbish out.
But no, that's a really good point, because I think most small business owners will be walking around, for want of a better word, you know, with a bag of receipts.
Yep.
So... they know they're spending money on things, but it's how you categorise that and then how you build that into a customer price.
First step, just, you know, capture it into the phone.
Yeah.
Get it into your accounts.
Scan it
in. Start looking at the overheads. And then the next step is to start looking at individual project costs. And it applies not only to contractors, there's consultants, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're an accountant, a lawyer, anybody that's doing services, you know, just categorise it by client and see whether how much time you're spending on something actually relates to what you're earning. If it doesn't, then, you know, you've got to do something about it.
And don't think you can do it, you know, 9 months after the end of a financial year.
It's a lot easier to do it as you go along.
Try and reconcile it all then.
Brilliant.
Any other kind of tips out there in terms of, you know, things to think about as a small business owner? What other kind of fundamentals?
I think the basic pattern that all small businesses go through, I think reaching out for help is obviously is something that I'd suggest to people, because what you're experiencing has been experienced before, and there will be an easy solution. The next one is people, and starting to manage people and how you go about growing the team is often one that they trip up on. A lot of people, certainly one-man bands, will say, I need somebody working with me. and they'd bring somebody in to do a little bit of accounts, do a little bit of marketing, do a little bit of this, that and the other, sort of like a general all-rounder. They call them the office manager, you know, so they've got a grand title. And then as the business grows, they may want to sub out the marketing or whatever, and so they bring in a sort of, you know, somebody to oversee the marketing partly. And then somebody says, oh, but, you know, you're taking that bit of work off of me. And so you immediately get this conflict. So titles and job roles, don't think of just the ones that you immediately need to fill the roles, but think how it will progress in the future as you scale. Yeah.
Peter, I want to play a little bit more music. Just give us a shout out for your website, if you can, please.
Yeah, the website's profitablecontractor.co.uk. And on that website, there's a quiz that people can do. It takes literally 2 minutes, just 12 simple questions, and it will give you a score of how your business is overall, how you're doing in terms of marketing, pricing, delivery, and leadership and management.
And so, there's plenty of useful resources on there as well, as articles and case studies and everything else.
That's so, it. Yeah, and the quiz actually gives you some hints and tips on each of those elements.
Brilliant.
All right.
Fantastic. Thank you for now. I think what we're going to do, we've got another music track chosen by you. We've got Big Country this time.
All right.
And then when we come back, I'd like to bring the two of you together just for some closing thoughts if we can. So do stay with us and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back, everybody, to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today. We've had two super guests with us in the studio. We've had Steph Harris from Apex Contractors, and we've had business advisor Peter Sell from The Profitable Contractor, who we've just been hearing from. What I'd like to do now, if we can, please, is just bring the two of you together just for some very quick kind of closing thoughts in terms of advice out there. Perhaps, you know, starting with you, Steph.
Sure.
Young people, careers, construction, you know, females in construction. What's your kind of advice to young people out there?
I think the first thing to remember is that your career is never quite linear. And I think a lot of people, you know, we've just spoken to Peter about the change in his career and the diversification that he's taken, the different roles I've had over the last 15 years, and not to feel like you can be pigeonholed too early. You don't have to make a single choice right now. I think making a choice is important, but know that that is a potential for change. And construction, as Peter and I know, is a fantastic industry in which to do that. Quite a few people I met in my first job, as I explained, have now gone on to do very different things but still in construction, and some have stepped out of construction completely. So I think that's a big point. I think, as I said earlier, having ambition, being proactive, the right attitude, showing your capabilities and skills, even if it's on a voluntary basis, if you've worked with clubs or, you know, you've done your D of E or whatever it might be, all the really positive things that employers will look for when looking to employ.
Amazing, so, thank you. And Peter, you know, it's a big subject, you know, how do businesses make money? But, you know, some kind of closing thoughts from you there.
Certainly, look at your gross profit, understand your markup and your margin, and get control of your overheads so that you know your costs. Yeah. Once you've done that, then and know your numbers, I think you'll be on the way. And then the next issue becomes people.
As you scale.
Yeah.
People issues. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Well, both, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a final shout out for your respective websites, if we can.
Yeah, sure. apexcontractors.co.uk.
Brilliant.
And profitablecontractor.co.uk.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Thank you also to our listeners today for tuning in. We're running into the news, but hey-ho, these things happen on live radio. We will be back with you in a couple of weeks' time with two more super guests before my summer vacation. So do join us for that. But I think for now, all that remains to do is say goodbye.
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 And we'll be with you again soon. Bye for now.